Hello, podcast listeners. Welcome to Let's Talk Art with Brooke. On this episode, Brooke talks on-site with Nancy Marshburn, a pastels artist based here in Charlotte, North Carolina. Brooke interviews Nancy about her career as a medical illustrator and how that provided the foundation and inspiration for the fine art she creates now. Enjoy.
That, and it's different. You know, I thought there'd be a little more crossover, and I'm not sure there is, but, you know.
Right. Well, I wanted to talk to you about that because I was like, whenever I've used pastels, the kind of art you do, it seems very, very technical. It's not technical, but I mean, like, just very, very, like, you have to be precise.
It's detailed.
Very detailed, and I've not had a good experience with pastels.
I was thinking that if I got something like a pastel, I mean, it allows you to draw, and I like to draw. I like pointed things. I like pencils, pen nibs, you know.
Yeah.
But yet it's a blunt end because, I mean, they're thick sticks, you know. So yeah. I thought, well, it will probably make me be less detailed. You know, it is in me. And I finally realized that, you know, my best artwork comes when I do what I am called to do.
Yeah.
When it is me, and that's what I do, certainly
right.
at this point in life. So, and then they're pastel pencils, you know. So
yeah.
I get right. So with some of this really, really detailed stuff, yeah, you're going down to a pastel pencil.
Okay. Cool.
So,
because I've tried to use pastels. I'm not an artist, but I've used pastels in art classes and stuff like that. And I'm just like, I just remember it being very frustrating. So it's just messy. I couldn't seem to do anything with it. So.
I find it to be, I think it is pretty forgiving. If I don't like something, I just go outside, you know, get a paintbrush, you know, rub it off. You know, you can put a fixative on it so that it won't sort of come through, pick up again, and then you just start over.
Yeah.
See, I'm finding oils to be a little frustrating, but see, I haven't really gotten as good with that. And so things blend when I didn't mean them to,
right.
you know,
right.
or I have to mix color. Like in a pastel, I just figure out what color I want. I kind of look around and I mean, Paul thinks I own every pastel known to man, but I don't, for the record. But I just find it and then I use it.
Yeah.
You don't really mix. I mean, there's some layering where you can get different colors, but it's not the same. So I've tried mixing something over here with the oils and you know, I do what I think should make it and I come up with a beautiful color. It's just not what I was looking for. So
right,
there's a learning curve to
yeah.
figuring out how to mix these colors.
Right. And I'm sure you get all kinds of interesting, what do you call them, like a happy accident, like just
yeah.
kind of like interesting things, like discoveries.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's part of the fun.
Yeah, oh, it's a journey, let me tell you. You know, I mean, and people think about art being, this just must be fun. You're just out there just sort of,
right.
you know. I mean, there are aspects that are actually, when things are flowing, it's the best feeling in the world. But then there's also, I mean, there's a reason it's called artwork. So
exactly.
It is perseverance. It is time, you know, in front of the easel.
Right. So. Right. There are fun parts and there are not so fun parts. Just like
mm-hmm.
anything, I think.
Right.
So, yeah, it's... But I think that's so cool. I'm just taping to where I might just kind of edit some stuff,
okay.
but just wanted to get the whole conversation.
Okay.
So, but yeah, tell me about your background. You're not a doctor, are you?
No. My background is in medical illustration. So when I started in college, I was a biology major and an art minor.
Uh-huh.
And I was talking to the head of the department of biology about my coursework, and he commented that he had a grad student who had gone into medical illustration. First time I'd ever heard of it, but if you think about it, it's a niche field,
right,
but somebody's
right.
got to do it. Somebody
yeah.
does the illustrations for medical textbooks, you know, journals. And so as I looked into it, there were about, you know, 5 to 7 schools in the United States that offer a master's in medical illustration. So that's the route I took. So they're usually associated with medical schools.
Mm-hmm.
And we took the same classes with the medical school students initially.
Mm-hmm.
And we dissected cadavers. We took histology and pathology. And then when they went into, you know, learning about diagnosis and treatment,
mm-hmm.
then we went into the operating rooms with our sketch pads and our cameras to draw and record surgery.
Yeah.
And then we'd go back to the studio and we'd work up these drawings and turn them into finished paintings. So I worked doing medical art for, you know, 20 years, I guess, somewhat off and on, because, you know, once we started having children, I did this as a freelance part-time basis. Mm-hmm. But there was a point where I was ready to make a change. My children were grown, ready to get back to my fine art roots.
Right.
And that's when I started looking at pastel, mm-hmm. and started taking workshops and getting involved with local art groups and just working on my artwork and doing things that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. This wasn't, kind of contractual sort of paid situation. Mm-hmm. And one of the workshops I took that ended up being influential was a Sally Strand workshop, Pastels on the Color of Light. So it was a lot of color theory. I found it to be a difficult workshop. Mm-hmm. A lot of my prior medical art was black and white, mm-hmm. pen and ink, halftone for publication. Mm-hmm. And even though I think that I had this book learning of color theory and color temperature, I realized I kind of didn't know how to apply it. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to use it. So she had me thinking about these things in the workshop, and I felt that if, she had set up still lifes, and that was her method of teaching and trying to teach these principles while painting a still life. Mm-hmm. I thought if I went home and set up a still life that maybe this would start making more sense. Mm-hmm. What happened is I felt like, oh, this is right in my groove. This is what I know. I'm used to this. Mm-hmm. I just felt like I'd come home again. And it took me a while, but as I thought about it, I realized that all these years of doing medical art, it was essentially doing a still life. If you think right. about it, you know, it's just a different subject matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, you think about having a bowl with, you know, typically fruit in it or flowers. I had been drawing a bowl of the pelvis with perhaps the bladder and the,
right.
the uterus and the rectum in it. But it is the same.
Same thing.
It's the same. You're looking at your forms and your shapes. You're looking at your a narrow depth of field. You have to be careful of your correct drawing, you know, your edges, your values, your color. So it was really like coming home. And I found more of my success and recognition in doing still life. And now I think I understand why. It's kind of what I've been doing for a long
right,
time.
Right.
And I think artists evolve over time. And I began to sort of look inside and think about what in my personal experiences could I draw on to move my work in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about what if I took the accuracy and the precision of medical art, but allowed myself the freedom to adapt and to just apply this visual twist and see what would happen. So this is where the idea of combining my medical art with my fine art was born.
Mm-hmm.
I do come from a different background than I think a lot of fine artists. And
yes.
So I have something a little different, I think, to add to the conversation. And this was something that I felt like I needed to explore.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to see what would come out of this with no real, understanding of exactly how this is going to play out and would anything come out of it. But it's just something I felt like I needed to do, and that I would regret if I didn't follow this through.
Right.
And so this idea of this series, The Healing Power of Art, combining my medical art and my fine art, it was born. And I had this idea of fulfilling a purpose of healing and repair and return to wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people in hospitals they have fear. They're afraid of procedures. They're afraid of medical instruments, needles. So what if I took a medical device, but used it in a way that was non-threatening?
Mm-hmm.
And so with my still life background,
mm-hmm.
I thought it was a very natural progression for me to use a piece of fruit.
Yeah.
So a piece of fruit has skin.
Right.
You know, it has fleshy parts.
Yeah.
It has juice.
Yeah.
So in a way, it mimics the body.
The body, yeah.
And actually, medical students have been known to practice suturing on fruit.
On oranges and
stuff, yes, because it has... because it has sort of a skin and a little bit of a feel
right.
of the human body.
Right.
So I started thinking about, you know, how could I, it's a conceptual sort of thing. So what, you know, what would need healing? How could something be repaired? So in one of the paintings, the lemonade, I took a diseased lemon slice. I cut the lemon, took out a diseased lemon slice, and I'm replacing it with a healthy lime slice. Mm-hmm. And there is suturing in there. There is a needle. It is small. It is not the first thing you see, and I didn't want it to be.
Right.
This is... I wanted to draw people into what they thought might be a still life with this classic, you know, cut glass vase holding the lemon. Mm. And then as they're looking at it, it's like following this swirling suture line down to, oh my goodness, that's a needle down there. This is suturing there. It's repairing this pear.
Yeah. I think that's so, I don't know, I just think that's so great. I just think it mimics the body and mm-hmm. I just think you're very creative. I think it's very, very it's just such a novel work. I just think it's very, very, very intelligent, very, very I like it a lot.
Thank you. You know, there's the other one with the artichoke heartbeat. Now, that's a bit of a play on words with the artichoke heart.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the stethoscope kind of tucked around. Everybody kind of gets that one.
Mm-hmm.
I think something that a medical professional might pick up on is that the artichoke is actually situated in the painting the same way that a human heart is in the chest.
Yeah.
So a medical illustrator always draws from the position of the physician looking at the patient.
Okay.
So the actual artichoke is positioned in that way.
Uh-huh.
So I try to have enough drawn from medicine mm-hmm. that is accurate to give it authenticity.
Yeah.
But this is clearly fine art. You know, this is not medical art.
Right.
This is not, you know, a human being or anything. It's, and again, I'm also not trying to go for whimsy here.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't just trying to be funny, but you know, if somebody, a patient looking at this, or even a medical professional,
mm-hmm.
you know, people tend to focus on patients. But medical professionals also have needs. They burn out. They're under a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
I think a medical professional might could look at some of this, and if it put a smile on their face, then that is a form of healing.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. And I was reading the article that you were talking about, and I just loved how you were saying how just art has the power to heal, and I think that's really true. I think art is transformational. It's healing. It makes you laugh. I mean, it's very, very necessary. So, and hospitals are a great place for it, I think.
It is. You know, art produces an emotion,
mm-hmm.
and emotions can change your heart rate. It can change your autoimmune response.
Mm-hmm.
There have been studies that show that patients in a room with a window or a piece of art are discharged from the hospital faster than
mm-hmm.
those who don't have those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there is clearly a mental component to healing.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything that could be done by hospitals and artists to sort of alleviate some of that pain, even just get a person out of their own head for a little while.
Yeah.
You know, people in pain, it is hard to
not
get
focus
out.
On the pain.
Yes, yes. And it's a very real thing.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think giving people something to look at that just pulls them out of themselves for even a little while is a healing experience.
Exactly. Oh, I totally agree.
One other thing I wanted to mention is that I had this opportunity to do an artist in residency.
Yeah.
With this healing power of art. It was at the Hambidge Center of the Creative Arts and Sciences in Rabin Gap, Georgia.
That's
so an artist in residency is an opportunity for an artist to have some time away from all the pressures of everyday living. We were fed there.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to just work all day and then in the evenings come back and sit around the table with artists from all different disciplines. But it was particularly productive for me to work on this healing power of art series there. So I do mostly realistic work.
Mm-hmm.
And that third week, I felt I I need to do something different, or otherwise I wouldn't really be using the residency to its fullest. Mm-hmm. So I did one piece that was a conceptual art piece. I would call it editorial art, something you might see on a magazine cover or a book cover. And it was a piece with a blue crab as a symbol of cancer, mm-hmm. and then these electron micrograph T cells that are attacking it with just this strong perspective and using pushed color. The other thing I did there was to go like 180 degrees different from my usual realism, and I tried abstraction.
Right.
So. And I began to kind of think about what would the emotion of acceptance or hope look like, and think about what colors, what movements of my hand, what marks it would make would inspire these emotions. Mm-hmm. So that was a kind of a neat chance for me to just try something totally outside my wheelhouse,
right.
and experiment.
Well, how did you process that? I mean, how did you come up with that? Because I saw that and I was like, oh, I wonder how she, like, I mean, yeah, because I saw that question, what would the emotion of hope look like? But how would you come up with that? How would you even?
I did, I went to the International Association of Pastel Societies convention last year, mm-hmm. and went to a demo by an abstract artist. And she used to be a teacher, and you could tell, and she was very organized, and she had sort of some steps laid out to where you can get into the abstract. So particularly for a realist artist like me, I needed something to start with.
Right.
And then you can go from there.
Right.
But she gave me a little bit of a path to follow, and I kind of did that. And you know, when you think about the emotion hope, colors, you know, it's like oranges, reds, yellows, happy colors, mm-hmm. Joyful colors. I used marks where my hand was moving just kind of rapidly around the paper with different pressure points and creating different marks. So it's a... it's using, color theory and marks and... just trying to recreate in two dimensions, an emotion. Mm-hmm. And then the one with acceptance, I used a little bit of cooler colors, mm-hmm. because sometimes patients hear a diagnosis that it's not quite what they hoped for.
Yeah.
And there's a cycle of emotions you go through to where you come to accept that. So so the colors were a little more muted and cooler, purples, blues. But with a bright red in there, because you never really completely give up hope.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think that's so interesting. I think that's such an exciting and such a unique journey that you've had. That just this whole process, the whole career, just the just coming up with the art. I think it's. I mean, how do you? I mean, I guess you told me some about how you thought of some of your ideas, but I don't know. I just think it's so different. It's just so, it's just so unique. It's just hard to even...
I can look back and there has been a progression, for this Healing Power of Art series that's really been going on for many years. You understand with my medical art background. So I have a certain set of experiences and knowledge to apply to these paintings. And, I've gotten some work in some of this work in shows. I've gotten this article published, and then I think something that I'm very happy and grateful about is to have been accepted in this gallery, the Ann Nielsen Gallery, to show some of these paintings. There, I think that there was a connection between my healing series and some of the purposes of the Ann Nielsen Gallery. I was here last night for the opening of their Harvest exhibit, and I had an opportunity to listen to Anne talk about how she was called to have open this gallery as a light in the art world and a light for Charlotte, and that I think she has a real heart for people who are in pain and hurting, and she does give a percentage of proceeds each exhibition to a designated charity, and I don't think I've ever really heard of this before.
Right.
So there is a real sense of giving back.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool and unique.
Yeah.
And I mean, I left the reception just feeling energized, and I just feel like there's a lot of good things going on here.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like what Adrienne was telling me about her. So I've never met her. She sounds like a really nice person, really cool person.
Well, I would love to have people come into the gallery and see this, be a part of this. Sandy Scott's the gallery director. Young gal, very friendly, very poised, and you might get lucky and find Anne here, although I think she's a pretty busy person and probably
that's what I've heard.
Not here a lot. But it's a bright, open space with it has Anne's Ethereal Angel series that she's known for, but a whole lot of other artists work in here, so I really encourage people to stop by and see it.
Right, right. So when did you get started in art? Have you always been doing it?
Boy, there's a picture on my husband's dresser, and I am at my fifth birthday party in my little party dress and little patent leather shoes, and I am sitting there totally ignoring my friends and coloring in my new coloring book. So I think that kind of gives a clue. My mother said she wasn't very happy that, you know, I'm totally ignoring these friends and just doing this. But, you know, I've taken classes off and on really for years. I had to talk my parents into letting me take an art class in high school because, you know, my dad was an engineer. My mother was a bacteriologist, and they believed that science was the only way to go, and art was wasting my time. And so little did they know, here I've ended up kind of making a career out of
right.
both.
Yeah,
you know?
But
I've been painting for a long time. It's sometimes I think I have a mixed brain because I kind of work out of one side with the science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm comfortable there. In medical art, I always enjoyed trying to figure out what's underneath this layer and what's underneath. And if you move
right.
this, how does that affect the, you know, so there is a kind of a scientific side of my mind that likes figuring out these details and these
right.
facts. And and yet there's this other side of me that's an art brain. And I have looked at some of my paintings sometimes and I'm thinking, I wonder how I did that. I have no idea.
Right.
You know, it just sort of happened. I can't remember
right.
what I did.
Right.
Wished I could.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I've, art and science, art brains and science brains don't really seem to mesh too often. I think that's really cool that yours does. And I was reading the article, and you were saying that you'd always, like, even as a young child, you'd always gotten the concept of, like, how bones affect the shape. I was wondering, how old were you when you realized that? Because I certainly wouldn't have. I don't know how many young people would make that, would grasp that.
You know, I think it's trying to sharpen your observation skills. So, I mean, I would be looking at something and trying to figure out how to draw it.
Yeah.
And how to make a three-dimensional object look like what I wanted to on a two-dimensional surface.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, perspective, you have to sort of, you have to observe
right.
Carefully. And, you know, so I've started in realism and kind of stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, who knows what'll be coming down the path later.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that's so neat. I think that's neat. So, I mean, and I was then you said something, and I forget what it was, but you had said something like you started with realism, and then, or you were coming from a different background than most artists, and but I think how is it different? I mean, how is medical, and besides going to medical school, obviously, but I mean, but how is that different from how is drawing like the brain or the body is different than drawing anything else?
I think a lot of people's background comes from doing the fine arts in college and possibly getting an advanced degree in it.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of other artists who have come from the commercial art area,
mm-hmm.
and mine is more in illustration.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as far as training in basic art concepts of, you know, line and composition and color and value, you know, learning to use your edges, you know, you do all of that. Mm. I think in medical art, you have less flexibility,
right,
in terms of changing things, and because it's not like you can flip the heart because you think it would look better that way. You can't add a kidney, you know, because odd numbers like 3 work better artistically.
Right.
So you are a little bit constrained. So it's a challenge for a medical illustrator to try to make a good piece of art while you are still maintaining accuracy. Mm-hmm. You have to tell a story with the medical art. There's a story about me being in medical art school, and we went into the operating rooms to sketch, and I'm watching these residents, these doctors, looking at a medical textbook in the operating room. Well, it says here that this nerve is over here, and I'm like, oh my goodness, this really puts, you know, importance and sort of some pressure on the artist to be accurate.
Right.
So I think that the best piece of medical art is not only accurate and explains what it is meant to portray, but it also has the aspects that make for a good piece of medical art, like, you know, good composition and good line quality if it's a pen and ink, good values. So all those things, I mean, in some ways, it almost seemed harder doing medical art to try to make it a really good piece of art because you have some constraints.
Right. Yeah, you can't.
Like, that I don't have. Kidneys. I don't have in fine art, you know.
Right.
If I want to change something, I can. If I want to move a tree, I can.
Right.
If, you know, if you want to just change colors of something, you know, you can.
Was that hard for you to transition between the...
I think no, but it's mostly because I was ready to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I've done years of medical art, and I feel like I've contributed in that area, and I was just really ready to move on a little bit, loosen up a little bit, you know, paint what I wanted to paint, and, you know, have a little more flexibility built into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. So, are your paintings in any hospitals?
Not that I know of yet. This series is the first place it's been really exhibited.
Uh-huh.
The article for the Pastille Journal on the healing power of art came out last month.
Right.
So I'm hoping that there will be some interest in getting this work out. Mm-hmm. They tend to be kind of small, my paintings are, and it's because as a medical illustrator, you know, I'm doing work for reproduction, so it's down to one or two columns.
Mm-hmm.
So you do it, you know, about 8x10, because you can't do it 30x40 and think that it's going to reproduce well down to one or two columns on a printed page.
Right.
So that is the size that I'm comfortable doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have done some larger, and some of my oil paintings have been larger.
Mm.
But I'm really hopeful that the art will be shown in hospitals. I mean, this is a great first step, getting in the Ann Nielsen Gallery and having it here.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah, I think that's so great. And I was looking at your paintings, and I think they're really great. And I made some notes. So I wanted to ask you, what is plein air?
Okay. It is basically taking your oil painting or pastel kit outside,
mm-hmm,
and painting what you see outside.
Okay.
So you typically have to work pretty fast because the light changes.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people do it as a study for maybe a bigger piece in the studio that they work on later. But there's a whole group of plein air artists who their focus is to simply work outside in plein air,
mm-hmm,
and the strokes tend to be pretty loose and moving, but it has a freshness to it,
right,
because you're working fast, you're not overthinking, you know, you just, sometimes you just can get it down, and with sometimes less is more, so less strokes are better than more strokes.
Right, kind of like get out of your brain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like what you're talking about. So yeah, I saw the, was it Heart versus Heart of the Matter?
Mm-hmm.
What was the inspiration for that?
This Healing Power of Art series, they're all conceptual pieces. So it's I'm starting with a concept, not just sort of painting what's in front of me, because this stuff I'm kind of making up.
Right.
I'm putting things in there that aren't really there.
Yeah.
So, but I had this idea of, you know, you're in the kitchen, you know, cutting bell peppers, and I'm kind of, you know, this sort of looks like the anatomy of a heart. It has, you know, a bell pepper has cavities.
Yeah.
So it could almost be the two atria, the two ventricle.
Yeah.
Okay, next step, I'll get a red bell pepper. And I cut it in half, strongly backlit it so that it is highlighting these chambers, and it just, it looks like the chambers of a heart. So I kind of manipulated things a little bit and made it a little bit more chamber-like. But then I added the aortic valve, the mitral valve, the papillary muscles. This is one that perhaps medical professionals will react to and maybe understand a little bit better because they know heart anatomy.
Right.
But it was just doing something that there is a relationship between the structure of the bell pepper and the human heart, but have certainly carried it further.
Right. I just think that's so interesting, and I think that I don't know. I just think that it's so cool that you make those associations, and just that I don't know, and I don't know that anyone else would, except for like medical type people. Do you think that like doctors would make that association, that a red bell pepper is like a heart?
Well, probably. I don't know. I think doctors work out of a different side of their brain. So here's a story. I did a stent in Time, and it is it's an arterial stent that is used in blood vessels to open them up when there are problems with plaque blocking the vessel.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows the passage of blood through the blood vessel. Well, I used a vessel of a different kind. A friend gave me a peony flower,
mm-hmm.
and it has this kind of big thick stem with you know, leaves coming off, and so I've painted this arterial stent in the peony stem.
Mm-hmm.
I showed it to my sister-in-law, who is a cardiologist.
Mm-hmm.
Her first comment was, you know, I would never place a stent that close to the bifurcation of a vessel. So it was too close to where a leaf came off. So part of me, I'm just laughing because it's like, well, you know, Margaret, it's a peony. But this is a doctor's brain, and she is right.
Right.
You know, but it was just kind of, and I've left it that way. So
right.
So I had a thought of maybe changing it to make it, you know, more anatomically correct. It was like, no. I like it. This is a good story.
That is a good story. That's really cool.
So the stent that's the bifurcation that's what you really find unusual about this painting.
Right. Is that the only thing? That's really cool. No, I really like that. I really like your work, and I think it's very inspirational, very interesting, very different, very unique, and I think it's I just really like it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to kind of come up with these ideas. I'm not going to say it has never been done ever in the world. I haven't just scoured the internet to the ends of the earth.
Right.
I can say I've never seen it before.
Right.
So it is something that I needed to work through and see what came out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a fun process.
And I mean, and who would have thought? I mean, you said your dad was, I think it was your dad or one of your parents were like, art's not. Or just for, you know, not serious people. Who would have thought you could have made a career out of this? Like this, I mean, this kind of, not a career, because people do it, but I mean, like a career like meshing your medical knowledge with your artistic knowledge, I think that's just not done.
Yeah.
I mean, And you said that, you know, the medical artists are a niche market, and they are. And I guess I had never heard of it, but I guess, I mean, I don't know who I thought drew the stuff in medical medical stuff. But I mean, it's just, I just think it's so cool that, you know, that you actually make this happen, make this work. I don't know, it's just so many people, like, I don't even know what I'm trying to say. But just, meshing medical stuff with artistic stuff, I just think that's so...
I always liked doing the medical art in the sense that I felt like it was a way to contribute back, like, that people learn from these drawings, and that they're useful. Certainly the anatomy drawings can be published and republished because that doesn't really change. You know, some of the surgeries change. So it was a way to, provide some value in society. It was also a way to make a living in art. Mm-hmm. I didn't really want to teach. Mm-hmm. And fine art is a little harder way to make a living. Mm-hmm. So medical art actually kind of fit the bill for me, you know, in a lot of ways. But, at this stage of my life, I was very happy to let that go, and I do not do any more. Mm-hmm. If anybody calls me about medical art, I have some names I can give them.
Right.
And, it's kind of exciting at this stage of my life, you know, with my kids out of the house, mm-hmm. and to be able to, turn things around and kind of follow my dreams.
And do things for fun.
Yeah.
I like it. That's great. Yeah, this has been really great. I'm really glad Dr. Paul set this up.
Yes. You know, it's amazing how these little conversations go, you know, where you know, somebody you meet and it's a connection, and then, you know, things just sort of work together.
Yeah.
And things have kind of gone that way with this Healing Power of Art series. Mm-hmm. I think I'm not quite done with it, you know. I think there'll be some more opportunities to talk about it, and we'll just see where it leads.
Yeah.
Thank you to Nancy Marshburn for taking the time to talk about her fascinating careers. If you are in Charlotte, please go and see Nancy's beautiful work at the Ann Nielsen Gallery. If you're not going to be in Charlotte, please visit the gallery website at annnielsenfineart.com. That's all one word, annnielsenfineart.com. Let's Talk Art with Brooke is a Hotspur Enterprises media production.